Luba Mayakiso, very, very good morning. I apologize for that very, very strange intro.
You took an early holiday, Howard. Good morning.
My brain is already on holiday. I'm halfway to Graaff-Reinet in my mind.
What are you going to do in Graaff-Reinet?
I don't know. But it's halfway between, or not halfway, it's somewhat of the distance between here and the wilderness. So I guess that's what we're going to do. We're going to sleep over there. And apparently there's something called the Valley of Desolation. Have you ever heard of this?
I've heard of it somewhere, yes.
I don't know. Is that what you just Google?
I must admit, I've only driven through Graaff-Reinet maybe once or twice on my way to the Eastern Cape.
Right.
What is it?
I bought some nice ice cream, though.
Oh, really? And apparently there's a bookshop, according to one of our listeners, a very nice bookshop, but I think we'll get there too late. It's called the Valley of Desolation.
Oh, I think I've seen pictures of it.
Well, I mean, it's basically right in your hometown.
Tourists love that.
Did you hear the mocking? Did you hear that, Luba? Did you hear that?
Yeah, no, I've definitely seen pictures of it.
Oh, it does look beautiful. It does look like a Valley of Desolation. You just expect skulls and carcasses.
That's like the most interesting thing about Graaff-Reinet.
You know what? You've never been. You won't even give me the traffic in Graaff-Reinet a little bit later. Luba, are you going away?
No, unfortunately, my mum-in-law is not well, so my wife is actually out of town. So I've been struggling to be a father and a mother. You might have seen on Facebook that my 8-year-old came to me wanting oats, which I don't eat. I hate all porridge. And then yesterday, our 14-year-old wanted help in blow drying her hair. I mean, I'm an African with a brother who went to a boarding school. So what do I know about blow drying hair? But I had to weigh in.
You
should have renewed appreciation for the work my wife does.
You should have sent us before and after photos. I mean, of you. I don't mean of your daughter. Just to see how you coped with that.
Sure. It's not been pretty, but I'm surviving. So I think I'll probably be at home this Christmas.
Right, exactly. Rocking yourself in a fetal position. Okay, can we please talk about censorship? Can we please talk about this issue with Andile
Mlitama?
Thank you. I can never pronounce his name, and I really I refuse to feel uncomfortable about it. It's not an easy name to pronounce. What do you feel about the progress, what's happened, and where we're at with it?
Sure. You know, maybe I live in a different universe about these issues because I tend to get less offended. So let me put that right out there from the very beginning, that I saw, you know, people really getting upset about it. And
so what? Yeah? Which comment specifically are you referring to? Because I mean, there's enough of them.
Howard?
Can you hear me?
Okay, so we're focusing on his latest comments about going out and killing 5 white people, their relatives, the women, the dogs, and the pets, and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think the question I asked myself was, is it racist? Yes. Is it insightful? Is it hate speech? Yes, I think so. And it's unpleasant. But I always ask myself, and I say, are we not sometimes guilty of giving a lot of airtime to such comments? Because in our history in South Africa, we don't really have any evidence of let's say, genocide or anybody really carrying out hate speech. I know that sections of our community will say that, you know, farm attacks are motivated by some agenda, but nobody can prove it. So if you go back in time, and in our student days, the PAC had a slogan, one settler, one bullet. Right. And I can't for the life of me, you know, say it translated into action. I had a neighbor who was very pro-PAC. We used to argue about the statements. So it's always been there in part of our discourse to kind of stir up trouble and kind of incite and pretend that we're going to unleash hell on each other. But we never do. You know, the EFF came on stage and they've made several comments in similar light as well. You know, they've had marches in Cape Town, wherever, where they've had, you know, huge kind of fights with police or with other parties. But you can't really say, look, you know what, the EFF has actually gone out and targeted white people and so forth. So certainly, is it desirable to hear this comment? No. Is it racist? No. Does it divide our already polarized country? Yes, I think it does. But will it necessarily translate into somebody going out and say, hey, Andile Mlitama made these comments, now I must actually go and kill 5 white people? I don't think so. And I think for me, the interesting thing was his defense is that he was responding to Rupert's comments, and I hadn't watched his interview, so I went back and looked at it, and I think the difference was Rupert's a billionaire and kind of makes it tongue in cheek in a joking manner, but it's not much different. I mean, he's saying, I've got a friend who was a taxi boss, so if the red guys come, which is the EFF, they need to know I've got a taxi army. Now, in some ways, that's somebody saying, come for me, I have my own army. Now, one can also argue and say, given South Africa's history, we've had taxi violence for goodness knows how long. And trust me, I've spent some time trying to work with the taxi industry here in Cape Town and mediate. Now, that's an industry that's prone to violence. So the question then I was asking is, why is it acceptable for a billionaire, a Rupert, to kind of say, if anybody comes for me, I've got an entire army in the taxi industry, so you better be prepared. And he's not talking of housewives. He's talking of a group of people that we know have a propensity for violence, not just saying it, but actually carrying it out. So if Andile says, I'm responding to that, we may argue that the threat may not be real or whatever, but he's saying, that's what I'm responding to. And somehow people were angry about the Rupert comments, and he made some other interesting comments as well. I mean, when he said, you people. So he didn't cover himself with glory, but somehow, you know, the two are being separated, and because Rupert is Rupert, we let it slide.
I guess we did the same with Jacob Zuma. I mean, Jacob Zuma wasn't exactly unknown to make comments and to divide the country along racial lines. That was his strategy. So has Julius Malema done that?
Yes, and the Zulu King does similar things, and right. We kind of let it slide. So part of me, I do feel that in some ways we are making more of this than we should have. And I think the challenge, how it is, if you ignore it, people will say you're encouraging similar talk. But at the same time, the more we fuss about it, this young bloke thinks, okay, I've really hit a nerve. And he gets all the limelight that he wants. The media is running after him for interviews and is trending. So in a strange way, we actually make a bigger issue of it. And hence I was saying, is there a real chance that he will actually carry this out? Because what worried me more was, beyond that statement, I mean, I don't know the organization he spoke of, but he said, we're organizing 50,000 soldiers. You must sign up. I mean, that for me was more worrying about
He's never really been constrained by the truth. You know, he doesn't have a history of real integrity. I mean, he's told us that he was, I think, Walter Sisulu's love child. I mean, there's a lot of stuff here that goes back to, puts him in a very, very ambiguous or questionable light. So I think that we do have to take a lot of what he says with a pinch of salt. We can't really take exactly what he's saying that seriously, but at the same time, you know, is it a duty? You know, that he, Adrian Basson from News 24 has been threatened. There's been a lot of very, very overt threats. And isn't it maybe, you know, as much as I really do chafe against this type of censorship, not because in this case I think it's wrong, but my problem is where this is going to go to. The minute we, you know, the lines become narrower and narrower. At the same time, maybe making a statement every now and then that it is actually not okay to encourage violence and to disseminate hate, maybe it's not a bad message to the next Andile who's thinking about what he has to say as he tries to establish a political career.
I agree, Howard, but I think the challenge is, how does one do it? Because you've got almost two groups. You've got civil society being upset about such comments. Mm. Then you've got the parties. You know, and I've seen that the ANC has brought a statement, the DA, Agang, ACDP, and I think people respond with different motives. So I think you and I in the public might be genuinely offended. And I think there is a place for saying charges should be laid, and with various commissions and councils to say that this is hate speech and action should be taken. But I think the challenge becomes that when the parties weighed in, and I couldn't help but think that if you look at, you know, whether it's the ANC or the DA, they've had their fair publicity of negative publicity. And I question, are people jumping on this with improper motives to kind of deflect and saying, thank goodness I've got something that I can deflect attention away from my own troubles and focus on? Because they will milk the story and keep it alive for perhaps longer than it should. And you almost want a more surgical approach of saying, he makes the comments, a charge is laid, let's let those councils deal with it, but let us keep that of the media domain and stop debating it and everybody commenting, because you had various personalities, Ziggy Mzwai, Steve Hoffmeyer, everybody else wading in on Twitter and social media. And for me, that's the tragedy. I usually find that comment gets made and it gets far more attention than it should have. I mean, if you were to ask and say how many people actually watch the press briefing that he gave or the event in pods, very few people would have been aware of it. But somehow we give something legs and we make it far bigger than it is, and it becomes not just a bigger problem, but in some ways we give airtime.
Right, so that's what's interesting to me, because I don't know if you've followed a guy, I was talking about him yesterday, I think his name is, I can never pronounce his name either, something like Yiannis Yiannopoulos or Yiannopoulos, something like that. He's a right-wing, ultra-right-wing conservative in the United States, and intentionally provocative. He was an enormous, enormous success, and then he was banned by Twitter and Facebook. Yes. I'm not sure which other social media platforms, and because he didn't have a way of getting his message out there, he's effectively bankrupt today, and it's probably not even 2 years later. Maybe it's a year. And so really what's happened is he's been policed down to irrelevance, because nobody even knows his name anymore, because he's no longer active on these platforms. Is this the way to do it? But again, you know, or is this even more of a concern, as I mentioned earlier, that you've got ultimately Facebook and Twitter and social media platforms making decisions as to what we can and can't hear?
Look, that is a worrying thought, because on the one hand, you want freedom. You want freedom of speech, and you want freedom for the press and for me to express myself. Now, how do you balance that? Because those who object to his comments will point to sections of the Constitution and say that, you know, he's flouted these, he has rights to free speech, but he may not incite violence, he may not do certain things. And I think that becomes the challenge in a democracy, is how do you balance the two? And certainly he has his rights. And I think the added complication here is that the social media houses are then pronouncing, I mean, I think there was one video that was YouTube decided to take the video off. So I couldn't even find it. I had to find it on somebody else's website. Now, I think the question then is, should Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube then police, which is the trouble, because they might have a very different standard. So it's easy for you and I to agree and to say that we have a constitution and we can vet something against that. And if it flouts the constitution, then by all means, we should act. But now we're going into a space where we're giving independent third parties like Facebook, like YouTube, the power, and based on responses. And they may argue that we had a backlash and enough people complained, but you can engineer, a kind of numbers. Absolutely. To complain. And I think for me, that's where it starts to become a little bit tricky, because, you know, these organizations don't have the same kind of protocol and they aren't as transparent. So if they decide to pull the plug on you, what if, for argument's sake, one of your comments that, say, people objected to, let's say you had the post about Christmas, and I have enough people who don't like Christmas, and I say, look, this guy's a nuisance, he's a pest, he's offensive to my faith, you know, ban him. And that, for me, is the issue, is it's almost sitting in a separate domain as opposed to sitting within government regulation, which is clear, transparent, that you can take to court. So I think you've got to balance the two. But certainly, I hear what you're saying in the U.S., where they've been able to police this guy into obscurity. So the outcome is desirable, but does the means necessarily justify the end? That's my trouble.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, there we do have to leave it unanswered questions. And I guess that's just how it is. We need to keep having these conversations, because we shouldn't just accept how things are playing out. We do need to fight against them, whether we agree with it or not. We need to understand exactly what it is that what the consequences are of certain actions. Lubomir Khiza, thank you as always. You'll be back next week with Kathy Kaler, but I'll catch you in January. I hope you have a fantastic December, and of course, a Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much. And my 25th wedding anniversary this weekend.
Wow. Well, mazel tov to you. That is
so
absolutely...
send that bottle of single malt. I'll be waiting.
Yeah, you'll be waiting at the post box for that. You know,
it'll never arrive. No, don't close it. It'll never arrive.
Exactly.
On my 50th anniversary. No, you can't do that to me.
Right. Exactly right. Oh, thanks, Luba.